Welcome to the Stephen Mansfield Audio Podcast.
So I recently did a podcast called Standing with Women. It was about the Women's March that came right after the inauguration of Donald Trump. I talked about the things I could support in that march, the things that I couldn't, and sort of grieved that the cause of women in our country has been mixed in with some causes that really don't naturally belong there. But I also stated that I consider myself a Christian feminist. It's a term that I've coined for myself, and that I am very much in support of the broader cause of women in our generation. I got lots of feedback, lots of questions, the vast majority of it positive. But it made me want to answer some questions that were raised, and I'm happy to do that. So this is Standing with Women, too. By the way, a lot of what's brought this to my mind is Donald Trump's recent nomination of a new Supreme Court justice, a man who will be, I believe, a new Supreme Court justice, and the fact that that man almost instantly was pegged as being against women's rights. And this really brought the whole issue to the fore. So I want to address three different things in this podcast that came up in response to my podcast, and then again have also been raised by this recent Supreme Court nomination. And the first is, what is it about women's rights in this country that I am hesitant to fully and automatically support, and that I am concerned about being used to label men like the recent Supreme Court nominee? Well, I don't mind restating what I've already said, and I don't mind stating that case very, very clearly. I am strongly in favor of women's rights. I am strongly in favor of equal pay for equal work. I am strongly in favor of maternity leave. I am strongly in favor of the laws punishing rape and sexual abuse. I am strongly in favor of women in positions of leadership. Can't wait for there to be a noble female president. Have worked myself, and again, happy to bring in my resume just a little bit, for female executives. I have consulted with females in Congress and the Senate. I have worked for female clergy. I am in. I believe in it strongly. What concerns me and saddens me when someone like me, or perhaps a Supreme Court nominee, is sometimes labeled as being opposed to women's rights, is that this almost always pertains to abortion or LGBT issues. When you saw the Women's March, I was thrilled that women were showing up. I was thrilled that women were pushing back against some of the asinine statements by Donald Trump regarding women. Sinful, just evil things. And he admitted that himself for the most part. And I think there were some other things he said that he didn't admit. But nevertheless, that's what prompted the entire march. Thrilled to see women turning out. Thrilled to see multi-generation. Saddened, however, as I often am, to see the cause of women bound up with the cause of abortion. I do not believe those legitimately belong together, and my opposition to abortion, as well as the majority of people who are opposed to abortion, has nothing to do with anything related to women's rights. I'm not opposed to women's rights. I believe that abortion is the taking of a human life. I believe that my work to end abortion is a work that is absolutely about protecting a life in the womb and has nothing to do with trying to diminish the rights of women. And then at the same time, I'll have to say that if the women's movement is going to be determined to get bound up with LGBT rights, lesbian, gay, bi, and trans rights, and other things of that nature, I realize I can add more letters to that designation, as we all know, then you're going to not only lose a lot of people and diminish your cause, but you're going to be moving into moral territory that won't serve you well. In fact, the main parts of the march for women that concerned me were, of course, the advocacy for abortion, but then also seeing great big vaginas walking around, you know, people dressed up like vaginas and seeing the lesbian, gay, bi, trans emphases, the signs, the same signs I see in other kinds of marches. I'm not just viscerally angry and opposed to gay rights. I've expressed that many, many times in this podcast. But I do think that there ought to be a woman's movement that I can be part of, that I can support, that doesn't require me either to support unrestrained LGBT rights as they are currently defined by leadership or by the leadership of organizations that advocate for those people. And then at the same time, I do not believe, I think there ought to be a women's movement that I can be part of that doesn't have me advocating for the war on the unborn. You know, I've been a pro-life person for a lot of years at the same time that I've been, again, what I call a Christian feminist. And I'll tell you that a lot of my advocacy against abortion worldwide has been because little girls, little babies, female babies in the womb have been some of the greatest victims of abortion. Until recently, China had a one-child policy. Well, the vast majority, ranging by some estimates into the 90% of the babies that were aborted were females. Because if you're a Chinese family, and let's say you're working on a farm, you want a male, not a female. So let's kill the females. Well, that's not something that feminists, I think, in America want to be encouraging, a way of thinking, a way of behaving. But that is definitely what was happening. Because in an economy like China's, and at least the vast majority of the territory of China, physical labor is still the main way of earning a living. And a family needed a male. And so little girls in the womb were killed by the millions, maybe the 100 millions, as far as we know, over all the decades of that policy. And I want to just throw in one other thing here, and I won't go to great length, but I just recently had a grandchild, and he's the cutest little thing in the whole world. And it constantly strikes me that the day before he was born, he could have been aborted. His skull could have been crushed. His organs could have been harvested. He could have been chopped up in the womb. I know that's very, very graphic, but that's what we're talking about when it comes to an abortion. We're not talking about a chemical being inserted into a fetus and having it end in the womb. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about surgical procedures that dismember children that could be born normal and be legal citizens of the United States 24 hours later. That is legal in most states, and it is a process that goes on all the time. So let's be sure of what we're talking about. I want to advocate for women. I want to support women. I want to create a world in which my daughter, my grandchildren, my wife, women that I know in the world are able to rise as far as high as their gifts will take them and be protected. I don't know why that has to be bound up with abortion, which, again, as I've said before, more than half of America is in some form pro-life. And I don't know why that has to be bound up with the gay rights movement. And that's not because I hate gays, not at all. And to give you my bio on that subject another time. But it is because it is a separate moral issue. Some people raise the question, and this is number two. Some people raise the question, since I call myself a Christian feminist, how do I peg that in Scripture? And I appreciate the patience of my non-Christian listeners as I dive into this for just a few moments. But the fact is that I certainly understand in Scripture there are roles for men and women and children. Everybody's got a role to play in society and in community. And I certainly understand that there are some restrictions placed upon women in the New Testament. Now, I want to say very clearly that I am an Orthodox Christian. I lean Reformed in my theology. I attend a very strong evangelical / evangelical Anglican churches. I'm Reformed theologically, Celtic theologically. And so for those of you who care about those designations, that's where I am. So I'm coming from a position of believing that Scripture is inspired and authoritative for life and practice. At the same time, it does no violence to Scripture to understand that some statements in Scripture are meant to be understood as historically conditioned. It doesn't mean it gets us out of the requirements of God. It just means that they're understood to be historically conditioned. And so, for example, if you went to church this past Sunday and you're a male and you were not wearing a hat, well, then you weren't doing what's described in the New Testament. If you're female and you went to church and you were not wearing a hat, then or somehow covering your head, then you were not doing what seems to be taught in the New Testament. the reason that you probably didn't wear a hat or wear a head covering if you were a female is that we look at scripture and we understand that the descriptions of men having their heads covered, women having their heads covered, is historically conditioned. It's about a certain situation going on in the New Testament church. We're meant to learn from the principle. We aren't required to live out the exact practice. That happens from time to time. It's just good grammatical, historical interpretation of scripture. And in the books, Paul's letter to the Corinthians and Paul's letter to letters to Timothy, the settings there are in Corinth and Ephesus. Obviously, when Paul is writing Corinthians, the church that he's writing is in the city of Corinth. And when he's writing to Timothy, though it may not be obvious, except in one of the books, Timothy is in Ephesus. These are two cities with huge temples, huge cultic practices, lots of temple prostitutes, lots of temple priestesses, and these women became Christians. But they brought with them some of their rowdier habits from their temple priestess kind of life. And so Paul had to speak to restricting these women, keeping them from shouting out in church, keeping them from teaching false doctrines, and so he was restrictive, absolutely appropriately restrictive. What we have to do as Christians is we have to hold up Paul's restrictions as expressed in the letters to the Corinthians and also to Timothy as he's at Ephesus, and we have to say, is there anything else in the New Testament that guides us? And the fact is that there is. We are told, for example, that Philip had daughters who were prophetesses. Well, that may not sound like a huge thing, but they obviously spoke in church, right? They weren't emailing in their prophetic input. They were definitely prophetesses. They were definitely speaking in the church. They were definitely giving, representing, speaking of what God had given to them. We have women who are spoken of as being esteemed among the apostles, not by the apostles, but esteemed among the apostles. And the Greek grammar clearly indicates that these women are considered to be apostles. And I could go on and on. There are prophets in the Old Testament, Huldah. Those of you who want to look it up, 2 Kings 22:14. There's a prophetess named Huldah who really told the people at the time who were restoring scriptures that had been lost what those scriptures meant. She was primary teacher and prophetess to the people of God at that time. I could go on and on. My point is not to overthrow restrictions of character and holiness among women. My point, however, is to say that women can absolutely speak, they can preach in appropriate situations where their gifts have made a place for them, and there's checks and balances that always need to be. So that's why I call myself a Christian feminist. I simply believe that women have a role to play. I think some of the best men that we have in the church and in the world are women, and I want to see women fulfill their purposes, not in some hyper, ridiculous, extreme feminist mode, that dismisses men or dismisses the teaming that ought to be among men and women. But I absolutely believe that women have a role to play in the church and they have a role to play in society, and that we've had some misinterpretation of scripture, and that we definitely have had some horrible understanding of how religion and culture impact these things. Okay? And then finally, I want to say this. Many people ask me how I can be advocating for women at a time when men aren't doing well. And I think this is very, very important. I speak to it all the time in the men's conferences that I do and in the writing that I do. I do not believe that there is a tug of war, or there should be a tug of war going on between men and women. I do not believe we're all fighting for a pie that is a certain size. I think that this should be a mutual admiration society. I think that men should celebrate the rise of women. Women have taken nothing from men that men didn't abandon in the first place. And so we celebrate the rise of women. I want my daughter to achieve everything she can achieve. She's taking nothing away from my son when she achieves those things. Societally, that is not what has happened. Women have not stepped in and ripped jobs out of the hands of men and taken money from their paychecks and what have you. The more women accomplish, the more the pie grows, the more there is for men, the better off men are. It is not a zero-sum game. It is not a matter of what's a gain for women is a loss for men. It's not that way at all. And so many people thinking that, and many men being embittered by the complete decline of men in our generation, and I agree with that. There is a complete decline, and that's why I write the books that I do and I address the things that I do. But it's important for us not to allow ourselves to be positioned in a way that we see a gain for women as a loss for men. That is not true economically. It is not true societally. It is not true, certainly, maritally and in our families. The stronger Bev is, the healthier Bev is, the more Bev's able to thrive and use her gifts, the better off my life is, believe me. Same thing will be true for my daughter. She's not married yet, but when she's married, better at home, better in society, better in the company she works for, better for the world, that she is achieving her goals. Yes, with character. Yes, with righteousness. Yes, with consideration and compassion for other people. Absolutely. We're not trying to create monsters here. But the idea that an ascent for women or an improvement for women or rights for women is somehow a loss for men is just folly, and it's killing us. The pie expands. The wealth expands. We all do better. When the water level rises for one, it rises for the other. Okay, all ships rise when the water level increases, and that's exactly what's happening. So, bottom line, I do believe strongly in the cause of women. I yearn for a women's movement that does not require me to be supporting however gay rights are defined in this generation and whatever a rather extreme support for abortion is going on in our world. I was disgusted by the Planned Parenthood videos. I'm saddened by what I see happening with Dr. Gosnell and others. I think it's a time for a national reconsideration of the issue of abortion. Let me support the cause of women without having to support the cause of abortion as it's currently defined. And then, of course, yes, Scripture, many Christians and churches need to reconsider Scripture from the standpoint of what women can do. I'm certainly not dictating. I'm not even a pastor these days. I simply think that there's a place in clear teaching in Scripture that women have a role to play and a more heightened role than most churches allow, and that we'll all benefit from that. And then finally, I just don't think we're in a tug of war. I think we're in a mutual admiration society, and the more we cheer each other on, the better we'll all do.
Stephen Mansfield is a New York Times bestselling author, a popular speaker, and a frequent faith and culture commentator on Fox and CNN. His groundbreaking books on faith and society include The Faith of George W. Bush, The Search for God in Guinness, Mansfield's Book of Manly Men, and The Miracle of the Kurds. His new book is Ask the Question, Why We Must Demand Religious Clarity from Our Presidential Candidates, available on Amazon. Learn more about Stephen at stephenmansfield.tv. The Stephen Mansfield podcast is directed by Isaac Darnold, who also wrote, produced, and performed the podcast theme song. This is a Chartwell Literary Group production.